A city is stronger together. So let's hear from the business and community leaders that keep Milwaukee on the upswing. Presented by Horicon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Now here's the host that's always on the upswing, WTMJ's Jeff Sherman.
Now, to business, gentlemen.
Welcome to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. We are proudly presented by the good community-minded people at Horicon Bank. We are joined in studio by Roger Kaplinger. Roger's a volunteer ambassador with the Sina Megawitz Foundation and a former executive with our Milwaukee Brewers. Spent more than three decades with the team. Retired in 2022 from his position as Vice President of Medical Operations, Health, and Safety. Roger, really appreciate you taking time out of your day to spend it with us.
Well, I appreciate you having me. Thank you very much, Jeff.
Of course. So let's just kind of, for fans that need to know a little bit more about you, what inspired you? Go back a little bit in your career journey. What inspired you to dedicate your career to keeping athletes healthy?
Yeah, so when I grew up in Denver, Colorado, and okay. I was in high school. I went to a Jesuit high school, and my uncle was an NFL referee. Hmm. And so I was a pre-med student, and so unfortunately, the program got Title IX for football at a small university in Southern Colorado, and my Uncle Lou was like, hey, I think you would be really good at this athletic trainer because you can practice medicine but still be close to team-oriented stuff, which you've been around your whole career. So that's what kind of inspired me to become an athletic trainer. And then, you know, the Milwaukee Brewers had a AAA team in Denver before the Rockies, and I did an internship with them and then just started climbing the ladder with being a minor league athletic trainer and a major league head athletic trainer and then the vice president of medical at the club.
Great, great. And then if we go back a few years to 2017, you received your pancreatic cancer diagnosis. Yeah. You know, tell us about that moment. I think we've all had cancer diagnoses in our families, in our communities, but walk us through that moment and then the recovery journey.
Yeah. So, you know, I had some stomach ailments. My personal physician, Dr. Mark Niedfeldt, who's our team physician as well, you know, we ran some tests and you know, it seemed like maybe you have a GI bug and then, you know, start unpeeling the onion here. And it's like, okay, well, now we've got an MRI, we've got a CT scan, and now we think you have pancreatic cancer. And so, you know, doing some endoscopic ultrasounds and biopsies confirm the diagnosis. And then, you know, whenever you hear the word cancer and it's to you, you know, it's difficult to swallow, right? And so I took a moment from my wife, Jackie, and Dr. Niedfeldt and walked around the block and just got my thoughts together, kind of say, okay, how am I going to digest this? And then, you know, making some analogies with baseball that I've been in through my whole adult life is you could either take curveballs or you can hit them. And so I decided to hit it. And so, you know, try to start investigating different institutions around the country that would provide the best care.
Well, and as a medical professional too, and then as a patient, you got to wear both of those hats as you juggle treatment options and find the right resources. How'd you deal with that?
Well, I have a really good friend that's a psychologist
good.
In Milwaukee here, and he and I are good friends. And, you know, there's a lot of times I had to take my medical hat off to help the team that we assembled make the treatment protocol. And then bits and pieces of me being the medical professional, I always say I'm asking a question. I'm never questioning you. And so that was it's hard when you were in the profession and know a little bit about it, albeit my specialty is musculoskeletal.
Okay.
And it's difficult to digest at some points in time.
We're talking with Roger Kaplinger, former executive with the Milwaukee Brewers. So once you got your diagnosis, you stayed on with your role as a team. I mean, was that – there was no question or was it time for a sabbatical? Like, how did you make that decision?
Well, we have a great team at the Brewers and our medical staff and the devoted individuals, the men and women there, unbelievable. And, you know, it was a conversation with Mr. Antanasio and our senior leadership of doing what I could do at times. They built me an office in my home. so I could work remotely before, you know, we started working all remotely.
Right.
And so the team that of our medical leadership was unbelievable, and they picked me up. And for that 11 and 12 months that I was out, I tried to do as best I could for, you know, high level stuff and not getting granular there. And they were really great with that.
Yeah. And then you retired in 2022, and that kind of process has led to continuing education, research, fundraising efforts, deeply involved with the Sina Megawitz Foundation. Yep. I'd love to hear a little bit about that work and kind of what the retirement world has looked like for you, because I think you're still pretty busy.
Yeah, I think I will say this. I like to keep busy, but you know, I have a second chance at life. The wonderful people at the Medical College of Wisconsin and Dr. Doug Evans and the whole LeBond Pancreatic Cancer Program team has given me that opportunity, and I feel like me and my family need to pay that forward. Mm-hmm. I met Roger Magwitz through Dr. Doug Evans, who's the principal of the LeBond Pancreatic Cancer Program, and we hit it off. You know, we have the same name. I call him Big Roger. I'm Little Roger, and we have the same thing in common.
It's my dad's name too, Roger.
Perfect.
It's a good name.
Yeah. So yes. it was really a genuine marriage between us, because we have the same goal.
Yeah.
We need to promote awareness of pancreatic cancer. We need to fundraise to create research dollars to start getting people aware and start providing some sort of research for some type of testing. You know, breast cancer has the Susan B. Komen Foundation, which they've done an unbelievable job with mammograms, colorectal screenings now have come very far. But a lot of people don't know that they have pancreatic cancer until they're stage 3, stage 4.
Yeah.
And so we need to...
There's no similar type
not really.
Test
I mean,
yet?
There's some expensive, very expensive Galleri or Singular tests that they have, but no really just overall general screening unless you are really upfront and forthright with your general medicine practitioner regarding your family history, your current symptoms, your current pathologies that you may have of other diseases that you may have had in the past.
Yeah.
Those will all play factors involved. And so we're just trying to bring awareness, trying to raise some efforts for some research going on here in the Medical College of Wisconsin. 100% of the proceeds of our event goes to the Medical College of Wisconsin and the Cancer Center.
Okay.
So, you know, we're currently having an event at the ballpark. It's going to be a whole weekend next weekend of panel discussions, pancreatic cancer support groups, survivorship groups, second opinion programs. We're funding a couple clinical trials at the Medical College of Wisconsin. So it's a whole weekend of getting the far most leading experts in the country involved in pancreatic cancer right here in Milwaukee.
Great. And when we come back from the break, I want to have you talk a little bit more about the dinner on the Diamond and all the events surrounding that, which is next Saturday, August 16th at American Family Field. This is The Upswing. You're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. We are joined by Roger Kaplinger, volunteer ambassador at the Sina Megawitz Foundation and former executive with the Milwaukee Brewers. So, Roger, we talked a little bit right before the break about the dinner on the Diamond event next Saturday at American Family Field. Tell us a little bit more about this. What should fans know? And I'm guessing it's a pretty special gathering the entire weekend for patients and survivors and supporters, and you get to be on the field at AmFam. That's pretty unique.
Yeah, it's pretty special. You know, Mr. Antanasio and our senior leadership has given me this platform to host this event to raise money for pancreatic cancer, which is near and dear to my heart, and for the Megawitz Foundation to put a lot of effort into this program, to have a whole weekend filled with, you know, pancreatic cancer support groups. We have probably the most survivor pancreatic cancer patients in the country. We had over 80 last year in one location. You know, we have Dr. Evans, Dr. Urquhart-Brzozinski, which is at Honor Health in Phoenix, Arizona, that we do a lot of collaborative stuff with. Dr. Daniel Von Hoff, who's probably the far most leading expert in pancreatic cancer medical oncology. We have all these people speaking. We have dietitians, geneticists, nurse practitioners, clinical navigators, all helping patients understand this disease, understand where they're at in their journey. And then people like me that are 7-year survivors can give them little tidbits and words of encouragement and hope that I've run across and try to carry that tradition on.
Yeah. And there's a lot of special happenings, too. I hear there's a special rendition of take me out to the ballgame?
Yeah, so this year we're very fortunate to have a former Yankee, Bernie Williams, who's a very accomplished guitarist, who's going to do that.
Nice.
He has some ties to pancreatic cancer and some of his friend circles. So really excited to have Bernie Williams with us. You know, we have a whole host of people speaking. I'm going to do a tribute to my good friend Bob Uecker. His family, Mr. Antanasio, Mr. Selig, Christian Yelich and Ryan Braun, as well as my family, have started the Bob Uecker Chair for Pancreatic Cancer Research at the Medical College with the recipient of Dr. Bill Hall. And so Dr. Hall will be with us, as well as Dr. Evans, to show people what that chair means to pancreatic cancer and pancreatic cancer research at the medical college, to try to get that 13% survival rate to a much treatable, manageable disease.
Yeah.
At our location in Milwaukee here at the medical college, we have over a 30% survival rate.
Let's talk a little bit more about pancreatic cancer. You mentioned it a bit, but what are some of the advances and some of the early detection options that are available now?
Yeah, so I think, you know, family history is one. Genetic counseling is another.
Okay.
You know, do you have mutations? Are you seeing your physician regularly for yearly exams? Are you looking at your lab work? All of those things come into play when you're looking at diseases. And so, you know, we have research going on right now. We have two clinical trials. The first studies patients who have had pancreatic cancer, like myself, who've had, you know, radiation, chemotherapy, and surgery, the Whipple procedure. And then there, all of those things have come out to a great outcome. And what we don't know is what their levels are in their blood circulating. So we have that clinical trial going on right now.
Yeah.
And then another study is studying biopsies from your tumor. And then how can we look to classify those and then obviously go down a road with chemotherapy and then quickly pivot to another chemotherapy agent that may be working better than the one previously, or if the one isn't working previously, how to switch that really quick. Because what we want to do is we want to try to get clinical trials from the lab to the patient's bedside as quickly as possible.
That's great. So you went through this yourself. As what's a general message for people recently diagnosed with any type of cancer? You know, when you go back and talk to your family, like, how do you process that? And kind of from your lens, what's your suggestions?
Well, I think you need to have a great support team. You know, you need to have a great support team at home. My wife, Jackie, and our kids, Kyle and Brett, have been awesome through this whole process. But you also need to have a great medical team, and you need to research that medical team. One of the Magowitz Foundation pillars is that we fund second opinions through the Medical College of Wisconsin. There are sometimes patients that have been diagnosed that haven't been thoroughly gone through the process of, here's what our plan is going to be.
Okay.
That's kind of what I would say to patients is, when you're first diagnosed, you really need to formulate a really good team and a really good plan. And then secondly, I tell some people that have, you know, that we do patient support groups is, the internet can be your friend and the internet cannot be your friend. You could go down several black holes with that and then just spin yourself into a frenzy. And so you need to ask questions of your team, but that's somewhat of a pitfall. And some people fall into that. And so it's hard to get out of that.
Yeah. Especially, you know, when you're by yourself and you're just in front of your laptop and you're putting in questions and you don't, as you said, teamwork makes the dream work in every scenario.
Right.
And you should tackle it that way.
Yeah, and you have to trust your team. And the team at the medical college is really robust, has a you know, I don't think Dr. Evans ever sleeps, but, you know, he's just amazing, and he's assembled a great team.
Yeah.
And that's why we picked the medical college. We vetted several other institutions around the country, putting my medical hat on.
Right.
And so the best possible outcome for us was the Medical College of Wisconsin.
All right. We'll be right back. I'm Jeff Sherman. This is The Upswing, and we are proudly presented by Horicon Bank. Welcome back to The Upswing, proudly presented by Horicon Bank. Oh, I want to go back to the field a little bit. I think a lot of our fans have kids, grandkids playing Little League right now. What are your suggestions for the youngsters playing the game in terms of stretching and preparing and just to make sure that they're not getting injured playing the game they love.
Yeah, I mean, baseball's a really, really hard sport, right? Yeah. You have like 0.08 seconds to try to hit the ball. And so what you need to do is prepare yourself, right? Even before you get to the field, you need to hydrate yourself. You have to eat a well-balanced meal. You have to get rest. Rest is a key important piece of how we work with the Brewers is how we keep our players available every day. Mm-hmm. And so that's key. When you get to the park, you need to warm your muscles up, just like when you're in the wintertime warming your car up. You need to get it ready to play. And that's where sometimes little league coaches don't take it really serious, or their players don't take it very seriously. But flexibility, keeping your muscles strong and loosed to perform the actions that you want. And then afterwards, you know, hydrating yourself again. One of the things that we tell a lot of little leaguers is, you know what the best form of hydration is? Chocolate milk.
Ooh.
Chocolate milk is a hidden gem in our world. And so, you know, electrolyte stuff.
Is that protein in
protein.
The milk? Is
yep.
it like,
yep.
walk me through that a little
protein
bit.
Protein in the milk.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it rejuvenates and gets your muscles back to where they need to be, because every time you use muscle, you break it down and you need to rebuild that. And your body's very good at doing that. But sometimes it needs assistance.
Yeah.
And so sometimes we forget to do that. You know, eating during games. You know, if you see our bench, we have various bars and things mm-hmm. that our players can snack on during the game because they're expending a lot of energy.
Yeah.
And especially in the summer months when you're playing in Wisconsin, it's been so hot lately.
Right.
I mean, you are sweating and you are in the sun and you may not be used to that.
Nothing more says Wisconsin than staying hydrated with chocolate milk.
Yes.
In the heat.
That's why they serve
the
it at the fair.
That's right. It's great.
Yeah.
All right. Obviously, Brewers playing well.
Yeah.
Going to forge through the end of the season really well. You had a great stat on the Dodgers. Can you just recite that for me?
Yeah, I think, you know, injuries are part of the game,
yeah.
right? And I heard a stat before that, you know, the Los Angeles Dodgers have a very large market club,
mm-hmm.
and they have about as much money on their disabled list as we have on our active payroll.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's the job of the medical staff on all 30 clubs in Major League Baseball, is to try to keep their 26 guys on the field all the time.
Yeah.
It's very difficult. It is a game of injuries. It is a game of attrition. You play 161 games in 181 days. It's really hard.
Very good. Dinner on a Diamond is Saturday, August 16th at American Family Field. Where can people get ticket information?
Yeah, you can go to cenamagowitzfoundation.org. It's all up on the events site there. We're expecting a large crowd on the Diamond. It's business casual. It's seating of 10 people per table. You know, we'll have physicians talking, some pancreatic cancer patients talking. Our good friend Lance Allen will be emceeing. We'll have a live auction. We're going to have silent auction items. It's a really, really good time to have dinner on a really beautiful ballpark that we have, and to show that off as the jewel of Milwaukee.
Very good. Roger Kaplinger, appreciate your time. Go Brewers.
Thank you.
It's time to fast forward. Welcome to the future of almost everything in Wisconsin on the upswing. Joining WTMJ's Jeff Sherman, here's Martin Moore.
Welcome back to the upswing. Our good friend Martin Moore is back. What is on the docket? We used to do this segment, the future of almost everything. There is a lot to talk about, Martin.
Mm.
Tesla, Ford, Harley, Topgolf, and more.
Boy, are we even going to have enough time?
I don't think so, but we're going to do
we'll
our best to get through it all. So Harley Davidson has hired the former Topgolf CEO. Harley appointed Arthur Starrs, formerly of Topgolf, as its new CEO. He'll take over October 1st. Before Topgolf, he was in leadership at Pizza Hut, at a cinema chain, and an investment banker. So he brings some good chops. You're a big Topgolf fan, aren't you?
Boy, you betcha. Well, Lux.
All right.
Because
Lux,
we have Lux.
Okay. Same concept,
it's the same,
right? You know, that entertainment center, interactive games, scoring, social activities. What lessons can the new CEO at Harley bring from Topgolf to revitalize Harley Davidson?
Ooh. You know, when I first saw that Harley Davidson was bringing him on, I was just kind of like, Topgolf, huh?
Yeah.
And there was this massive disconnect. I couldn't really put my finger on what it was, what skill sets and experience he had that Harley thought this is the person we need to take us into the future, get us out of this slump and get new riders. And the more I thought about it, the more I realized sort of what a brilliant chance it is to bring this guy on and see what he can do. Because if you think of something like Topgolf, their entire business model, like if you're just completely zoomed in, is golf. Swinging a golf club, right. Hitting golf balls. Not everybody likes to golf. I would argue most people don't golf. Golfing is a very sort of niche thing. But when you zoom out, they got bars. It's a fun family thing. The stakes are very, very low. There's not a lot of pressure. And so what I think that he can bring is sort of like this idea instead of marketing skills to get people to entertain buying and riding a Harley Davidson the way that you get people who don't golf to go to Topgolf. Right. People like my wife or friends I have that have never golfed before, and I'm like, you got to try this. This is great. You're going to love it. And so that's what I think the unique set of skills and experience he's going to hopefully bring to Harley to help them get, because ultimately what you want is to bring in riders who've won, maybe never ridden a Harley before in their life, or two, never even ridden a motorcycle in their life.
I mean, it's really seeing the business through the entertainment lens, because that's what motorcycles are, is entertainment.
It is.
Yes, they're transit. Yes, they get you from A to B, but it's ultimately an entertainment
experience. I agree.
And you look at his success at Topgolf, 4.5 years of leadership there. He grew revenues by 50% from $1.1 billion to $1.8 billion, and then expanded into Europe and Asia too. So he has that footprint, and he's able to kind of look at the multi-market approach, which is really important.
Sure. It is big. That international approach in reaching as many markets as you can is going to be huge.
All right. Well, let's stay on the road a bit and move on to some Ford and Tesla talk.
Ooh.
I always think, Martin's a technology expert, but you're a car guy.
I did work on cars
too, right?
For 20 years.
Yeah.
That's a fact. That's in my LinkedIn bio. Or I might have scrubbed that.
So Ford is planning what the CEO is saying, its Model T moment for EVs on August 11th. CEO Jim Farley says the automaker is preparing a breakthrough announcement about its EV strategy. First, I got to ask you, using the term Model T, is that the right move for Ford? Or is that just this outdated reference and not good branding?
They call it this is going to be their another Model T moment. The Model T was really the catalyst for modern automobiles with the assembly line and its price point. And just everything that it did for the automobile market back in the early 1900s. And what they're talking about is this is going to be a similar type of Model T moment where they're going to be producing their own batteries in Michigan, a new type of battery. Mm-hmm. They're going to be potentially producing low-cost truck and a car in their new plant in Kentucky to try and carve their way into that sub-$30,000, maybe even sub-$25,000 price range and make EVs financially accessible to people that otherwise right now maybe just can't afford them or won't entertain them. And so I think it's appropriate if this whole thing pans
out. Right, if you can make that connection between EVs and Model T. I think that affordable small electric pickup space has a lot of market potential.
I agree.
And people are already – they're kind of used to, I'm seeing the F-150s that are all electric and those type of larger vehicles, and people are buying them and happy with them. So I think getting into that space will – find that low cost option and be able to compete against Tesla and GM and
I agree.
Welcome back to the Upswing, the ever popular Martin Moore back with us on the show. Speaking of ever popular, Tesla not quite as popular as it used to be. I think the brand loyalty slumped a little bit during Elon's alliance with President Donald Trump. But there's still a lot of innovation at Tesla for sure. And he's always trying new things, which I appreciate. And one is a new EV drive-in in LA. I want to get your thoughts on this, Martin. On paper, it sounds pretty spectacular. And I think some of the things we've seen on social media, the images are pretty amazing. But what's your first impression of the Tesla drive-in? Did it feel a little bit more like this quirky tech showcase, or is it like, wow, this is the reimagined retro diner?
Sure. It looks, from what I've seen in the videos that I've watched and the articles that I've read and just the reviews and stuff, It looks cool. You know, it's a retro futuristic diner where you can bring your, I believe, only a Tesla in and charge it. You know, it's got a super cool sort of like cyberpunk 2077 feel in the inside. Mm-hmm. You can order food. They have, I believe, like a high-end chef in there, but it's like, I don't know, higher-end cheeseburgers and stuff like that. There's a bar up top. But what I really like about it is, and you know, we've talked about this on the show before, is in the next 10 or 20 years, we're going to start to see the death of gas stations. And what does the replacement of those look like? You know, is it something like a Quick Trip, which is celebrated and you can spend some minutes in there and charge your car? Is it something like a rest stop, like, you know, when you're traveling and there's chargers there? Or something like this where there's a diner and it's sort of more of there's an experience, there's food, there's things to do while your car charges.
Yeah.
You know, you go there first and your car charges versus something like a gas station. You go there to charge your car, to fill your car up, and then maybe I'll buy some snacks or a Slurpee. And so I think it's a great idea and chance to sort of dip their toes early into what does charging cars look like, you know, in 10, 20, 30 years from now.
I mean, there's already such a passionate community around EVs, and this takes it to the next level. He hired the same chef that helped launch the Mr. Beast Burger.
Yes, that's what it was. That's
there you
what it
go.
Was.
Like, there's some innovation in there in terms of the food. But you think this concept scales? I mean, to your point about a Quick Trip or a Buc-ee's or those type of experiences, you go there to gas up the cars. They haven't really embraced the EV experience yet.
Yeah.
Could something like this go multi-market pretty quickly?
I mean, maybe. I mean, you have – or let me ask you the question because you have the BMW
– I have the i3.
Do you have to – does that charge or is that self-charge?
No, I have to charge it.
Okay.
So I have to find a charging station or charge
you would
be
a more appropriate person to ask. You know, is this something that you would – if you were on a road trip, would you be like, all right, cool, we're headed in this direction. There's a BMW diner.
Right.
Let's stop, get lunch with the kids, and charge the car. Like, is this something you would use?
Right. I mean, I think he's got to learn the lesson from the Quick Trip and Buc-ee's.
Sure,
like,
sure.
You know, create that experience. I stop at Quick Trip because I want the food. Yeah. I want that. I want an egg roll.
I want those chicken fingers.
I want $1.49 coffee. Yes. And seriously, everyone's always so nice there.
Yep.
And it's about that experience. And maybe the gas is, you know, it's competitive in terms of per gallon cost. But yeah, I think there is a big opportunity for EV gas stations like this.
Sure.
But then you pair it with the right, quote, convenience store.
Exactly. I think it's a great starting point, and I think they'll learn a lot. I don't think it's the end game idea, but I like to see someone trying.
Yeah.
I think it's we got to start now.
The whole drive-in movie thing probably doesn't scale to multi-markets. I mean, that's kind of a kitschy thing in L.A. for what L.A. is all about. But let's talk about drive-ins in Wisconsin.
Mm.
We still have a lot of old-school drive-ins. You're going for your custard or your burger. What's your favorite? And why?
My favorite drive-in?
Favorite drive-in.
Jeff, I haven't been to a drive-in
Martin.
Since I was like 7.
Okay.
Boy, you caught me off guard.
I caught you.
Very rarely I can't answer a question. I couldn't name a drive-in. Okay, give me some then.
Have you ever been to the Spot in Kenosha?
I just told you I haven't been to.
Okay. You go. My mom's family's from Kenosha.
Sure.
The Spot is amazing. They have these rip-ear whirls. It's been there from the 50s, a beautiful spot in Kenosha.
So is it like a really cool old school like 50s building
old
where they come out like on roller skates?
And all that deal, yes. And then the Kilty in Oconomowoc.
I've heard of that one.
The Kilty's amazing too. A ton of stalls. Come out to the car for you. It's cash only. So you got to be cognizant of that if you're going. But they have this Kilty burger that's like this old school sloppy Joe. Amazing. So I think it's really cool that Wisconsin is continuing to embrace the drive-ins, even though Martin Moore doesn't go to them
anymore.
Well,
now I want to. I thought it was like a Hot Topic or something where like it just didn't exist anymore. Maybe Hot Topic. Radio Shack that just didn't exist
That's
anymore.
That's right.
I love it. I think it's great, especially if people are going. Like what a cool experience. And the thing is everything that's old is new again. And so you have generations of kids who never grew up experiencing drive-ins. So here's an opportunity to introduce people to someone, you know, something that they'd be like, this is awesome. Like, I don't know. Interesting. Cool. Boy, I learned something new today.
There we go. That's what it's all about. When we come back, let's talk American Eagle and let's talk Raising Cane's. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined by Martin Moore. Martin, a lot of fun topics on the docket today. So, is Sydney Sweeney working for American Eagle? This week, American Eagle surged 23% after President Donald Trump complimented the retailer's marketing campaign with actress Sydney Sweeney. Retailer partnered with the Euphoria star on its fall marketing campaign, but the ads have been maybe panned a little bit as maybe too sexist or what this or what that. I think they're somewhat creative, but I'm probably not the core customer. What does the massive reaction to this campaign say about, I don't know, the state of marketing today, mixing celebrity and politics?
You have to be careful.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, that's always been the case. I mean, I've been working in marketing for like a decade, so, you know, I know that. But you have to be extra careful. And you really got to like vet this stuff because you just don't know who you're going to tick off. Mm-hmm. Like when I saw the ad, I was like, huh, that's clever. Right. Like, I get it. She's good looking, you know, jeans, blah, blah, blah.
Jeans, double meaning.
You know, I got a dad bod, so some people would probably, it's debatable if I'm good looking or anything like that. Whatever. And I was like, okay, clever, next. But a lot of people saw it very differently. They saw it as very sexist. Mm-hmm. They're bringing eugenics into it and just all these things. And my brain did not go that direction.
Yeah.
So I get it, but at the same time, I'm just like, man, is that where your brain goes every time some of this stuff comes out?
Right.
And, you know, brands really have to tiptoe and really sort of vet a lot of this stuff or it can get out of control.
I mean, ultimately, if you can anchor it back to sales and we'll see those figures coming out in the next couple months.
Sure.
Then it, quote, worked. But
bad press is what's the old saying?
Any exposure is good exposure.
Yeah,
but
like
we'll see how it all comes together. See if it has some staying power or if kind of the buzz is just going to fade away and American Eagle is going to go back to
finding
more creative ways to become American Eagle.
Right, right.
All right, let's move on to Raising Cane's this week. Fast food. Wonderful fast food giant. I don't know fast food. They're a giant. But Raising Cane's announced that it's continuing to grow its Wisconsin footprint. They're going to open a new store in La Crosse. I'm a big fan of Raising Cane's. I got to tell you this. But I think also we have taken this fast food genre, if you will, chicken, and now it's exploded. Everyone seems to be in the chicken game. How does Raising Cane's continue to differentiate itself in a market that's now flooded with chicken everywhere?
Oh,
I'm asking you the marketing
question.
Come on, Martin.
You know, I don't know. I mean, obviously, number one, it's got to taste good. It can't taste like cardboard or, you know, gas station chicken.
You know, there's a little bit of a chicken wars landscape going on now between Raising Cane's, Dave's Hot Chicken, even Chick-fil-A, which was the leader forever.
See, I don't like Chick-fil-A.
Overrated. Long lines, too. But it's kind of the
old
school leader, right?
Like the cream puff, overrated. Overrated.
But the popularity chicken is going to McDonald's, Wendy's, even Taco Bell, expanding into their,
Taco Bell?
Their chicken menus. Yes.
Garbage. Junkyard chicken. That shouldn't even be called chicken.
I want to have all of us right here because we're about community. We're about chicken. Right here on the Upswing, producer Jaslyn's going to join. I got 5 chicken franchises right here. I want you to rate them.
You got
to
marry one, kill one, and what is it? What is it?
Raising Cane's, Dave's Hot Chicken, Chick-fil-A, Popeyes, and KFC. What's your go-to number one on that list? Jaslyn?
Raising Cane's.
Raising Cane's, why?
Well, so I grew up in Illinois, and
we
didn't have that there. I had a friend in Ohio, and when I visited him, I had it for the first time. It was the greatest thing. I thought it was just an Ohio thing. So last time I went through and I stopped in Ohio, I'm like, oh, I got to get Raising Cane's. And now one opened in my hometown of Champaign, Illinois, after I moved here, and now there's plenty. And I honestly haven't even gone to it because it's hard to get to, but I love it.
Mm. Chicken fingers, Texas toast, that iconic Cane's sauce. They've opened 100 new restaurants in 2024. Cane's a big leader. Martin?
Popeyes. I've always loved Popeyes.
Wow.
I love the crispy, cornflaky kind of texture that's on it. They're always like nice and juicy. Yeah. They're delicious. Not too big, not too small. They're just... I'm a big Popeyes fan.
I feel Popeyes is sometimes lost in the chicken game a little bit because they've been around for so long. Kind of like KFC.
Yeah, absolutely.
If I got to pick one, I think Dave's Hot Chicken now is coming on top for me.
That's good. Delicious.
You get to pick the heat level, too.
That's delicious.
And you go, like, the hot is hot. And I got this bald head here, and I'm just, like, sweating as I eat Dave's Hot Chicken. I love it. And owned locally here by the same group that has Qdoba. I like Dave's a lot. The menu's really easy to order from, too.
I think the appeal of chicken is that you can have that spiciness. It's something that, because you don't really get a spicy burger.
No.
Yeah. All right. Finally, it's a big food theme here. I like it.
Let's go with it.
Final weekend of Wisconsin State Fair. If you had $6.20 in your pocket to spend either today or tomorrow at the Wisconsin State Fair, what are you buying?
Well, we had this conversation when we were off air, and I said deep fried cheese curds because I love them at the state fair. But then Jazz said, I don't know that you can get those for $6.20. And then I thought, you're right. And then I thought even deeper. I was like, you probably can't get anything for $6.20 other than maybe a bottle of water or a 7-Up. So if money's not an object, I'm going with the cheese curds there, man. They're just, I don't know what it is. I don't know if you just get them super fried fresh or what, but they're tasty. I know they got all the things, but for me, it's cheese curds.
Jaslyn?
I'd probably go with ice cream or cheese curds. I feel like that's something I can easily get for $6.20.
All right. Obviously, the cream puff is $5 for a single cream puff, but I think the $6 for the chocolate one. So that might cover it, but I'm going into that Wisconsin's product pavilion. That's my favorite.
Oh, that place is great.
Wisconsin State Cranberry Growers Association has these cranberry cannolis, $3. They're amazing. They kind of get that salty, sweet mix. They're only $3, so I can buy two and still have 20 cents
and
left over.
And tip 20 cents.
There you go.
And I've heard Wisconsin's the number one in growing cranberries.
Is it really? It is. There you go. Stay hungry. Take your $6.20. Take much more money when you go to the Wisconsin State Fair this
$620.
Weekend. $620 and eat well. Have fun. Thanks for joining us on The Upswing. Thank you, Martin. Thanks, Jess.